Right. Actually, it's I did some progress on my understanding of N equal 4 super young Mills. So it's a work which was done with Guillaume Bossard, who is a student in Paris. And I will summarize the result on the first transparent. So we all know that N equal 4 super young Mills is a beautiful theory. It's finite. Has no anomaly for superconformal invariants. Then it has exact electromagnetic dualities. It has many beautiful properties. So in 94, this theory, which is built usually as a supersymmetric theory, of course, was twisted by Vaffa and Witten. And I will give the form of the action they obtained at the time. And in fact, the theory we obtain can be also obtained as a dimensional reduction of the topological quantum field theory that you can build in 8 dimensions, which is a twisted version of N equal 2, D equal 8. And basically, everything relies on the extension in 8 dimensions of the self-duality equation, E equal B. So in 8 dimensions, you have to work on a manifold where you have this, you must have spin 7 holonomy to be able to write this equation where omega mu nu rho sigma is the octonionic invariant for form. Now, what happens is, so what we have obtained with Bossard is the following. Of course, you want to understand better the symmetries of N equal 4. And this is maximal supersymmetry. And it's well known that if you look at the 16 generators of the supersymmetry algebra, you have this SU4R symmetry. And there's just no way to close the algebra off-shell, which means that you have to give, in the same time, the symmetry and the action. Now, what happens is that if you're on a manifold such that you can do a twist, and I will explain how it goes, these 16 generators can be rewritten in a twisted form as two scalar operators, two vector operators, and two self-dual, anti-self-dual two forms. And of course, if you count 1 plus 1 plus 4 plus 4 plus 2 times 3 is 16. You can see this game, and of course, you won't get anything. The fact that the algebra is not closed here means that it will not be closed on this side. However, what happens is that you can isolate. If you look at these objects, you will discover that if you take 9 of them, which are S mu, S bar, and S mu minus, it makes 9 generators, and then you have a closed off-shell algebra. And the non-closure of the algebra that you have when you take this form, which is totally reducible, comes from the fact that S mu and S bar mu and S bar mu minus do not commute well with the rest of the generators. So when you twist, what happens is that you concentrate in the corner the non-closure of the supersymmetric algebra. There is another subalgebra which closes. It's the one made out of S bar, S mu, which is 1 plus 1 plus 4 generators. And this one is also closed off shell. The very nice feature is that suppose you're able to build geometrically these 6 guys and ask for an action which is invariant under this symmetry with 6 generators, surprisingly, you will find the exact full supersymmetric, the N equal 4 supersymmetric action. So what you have to do is to understand what is this, this, and this. And in fact, as you will see, it has nothing to do with supersymmetry. Then you build, you construct the action. You get something, and since the something is just the supersymmetric family action, it will have automatically the rest of the symmetries, which are thus given for free. So the way things work, I'm going to explain how it goes. It's very simple. It has only to do with the what is the gauge field, and there is a built-in SL2R symmetry which actually replaces the big SU4R symmetry, which seems to be an accidental symmetry at the end of the day. But of course, it's very useful symmetry. Now,
is there an analogous result for n equals
8? Okay, so it's a kind of game that I started because I want to do that for supergravity, right? Now, I'm not convinced. No, what you do here has only to do with the fact that you have a gauge group, Young-Mills gauge group, and you make a topological symmetry out of that, and it has to work with reparametrization group. So I'm convinced that at someday I will be able to do that for supergravity. Actually, I have many preliminary results for supergravity, but nothing as complete as this.
This closed algebra with six generators.
Yes.
Is it a Clifford algebra? You know what I mean? What is it explicitly?
I'll show you. It's now, first of all, one has to see that it's not such an easy game to play with n equal 4. And of course, if you know, everything that I say could be done in a very progressive way, as starting from supersymmetry, then doing the twist, and what in 94, for some reasons, Vaffa and Witten looked at the twist of n equal 4. Then, from their point of view, things are not complicated because you have the Lorentz group, which is SU2 cross SU2. Then you have this SU4R symmetry, which contains many SU2 factors. And the twist is just the fact that you do a change of variable such that you reinterpret the SO4 as the product of two SU2 that you choose at will. So somehow you mix R symmetry and Lorentz symmetry, and you just redefine what you mean by Lorentz invariance. So, and the trick, of course, is that when you do a twist, you change a spinor using gamma matrices in a vector, right? So it's best to look at the twisted action that they had, which is a very useful action. And of course, we did a lot of things out of it. So, okay, believe it or not, this is the n equal 4 supersymmetric action that you don't recognize here. But it's not so complicated because you have Lagrange multiplier fields here. So when you eliminate H, you get the squared of these guys. So we get F mu squared. It's really like a TQFT. And when you eliminate the other one, H, here, you get the squared of this. So you get kinetic energy for tau, which is one of the six scalar fields. And you have a Selvell 2 form, which is a boson, which is three scalar fields. So we get three fields here, one here. And they have the interpretation of four fields, which are the dimensional reduction of the gauge field in higher dimension. And then, so you have four scalar fields, and you have two other ones here that are just ghosts of ghosts. Right? So it's clearly a TQFT if you have experience in that. But of course, you don't really understand what's going on. And as usual, when you have a TQFT, you understand what is the Q operation that we introduced a long time ago, which is a scalar combination of supersymmetric generators. And then it's obvious if you have experience that this action is Q of something, right? But the something is not so easy. So I will have this symmetry with six generators that I will build geometrically, and the scalar operator S is Q, and the invariance under S bar and S mu is going to fix the gauge function. So there is a geometrical principle which is at the root of this action. Now, of course, Vaffa and Witten use this action for deeper purposes, which is, first of all, the partition function is a very geometrical object. And then, they did a lot of things out of that. And for instance, they found some nice links between the twisted super young n equal 4 and the two-dimensional rational conformal field theory. So first, I'd like to explain you, because I think it's not too well known, what is this vector, this topological vector symmetry? Now, again, in the usual language, you say, well, it's obvious. If you have spinors, when you twist, you get things like scalars, vectors, LDL2 forms, and so on. And the vector symmetry is just a particular combination of supersymmetry generators, which is a vector. Now, but it's obvious, actually, that S mu exists when you have a TQFT. So in the old time, you would say that an action which is topological, which is a function of gauge fields and topological ghost, is an action which is the sum of a d exact term, like second term class, plus q of something I call qs. Now, I mean, it's a kind of art to find what is s of what, the what. So call it lambda. Now, the reason why you write such an action is that if you have such an action, clearly the energy potential tensor is S of something. And then you will this action will generate obviously observables. Some observables will be independent of the metric that you choose. You can take this as the definition of a TQFT, but of course you don't really know what is this guy or this guy. It is the same. Nevertheless, having S at your disposal is very nice because S is a scalar operator, so it's well defined in curved space, which is the purpose of the TQFT to work in. And the other observation, which is very surprising, is that if you define S modulo gauge transformation, you really find, and that's how it was discovered by Witten, the combination of supersymmetric generators. Actually, you should ask another question that was not asked before is, after all, since this guy is conserved, it's energy potential tensor, what about this guy? Now, suppose you ask this guy to be conserved, actually, it will fix its form, and of course the expression of lambda of this function. Now, so you can be very brutal and say, I'm going to try to fix lambda in such a way that this is conserved. And in this case, this will, lambda mu nu will be the Noether current of a new vector symmetry, S mu. So you have in mind to have a vector supersymmetry of your action, which fixes this guy. And if you think a little bit, you will get the only thing you can have between S and S mu is this commutation relation, and that's the way supersymmetry will come into the game. So it's not really a Clifford algebra, but it's something, that's how they commute. Then the good question to ask is,
sorry, yes. You're saying nothing about S mu and S mu?
Zero. So, of course, this is a good question. Can we build S mu out of geometry as one can do for the scalar, the S operator? And the answer is yes, which is very nice. So, if you're uneasy with
that formula, translate into the formula that if you have a vector field.
Yeah. Right. So
you get the differential as EI plus ID. Is that what that formula
is? Yeah. Actually, when you will be in this is in flat space, etc. But in curved space, such an object does not make sense. So what's going to happen is that you have another differential than S called delta, scalar operator. And you will work in a case where in your manifold you have a covariantly constant vector field, kappa mu, and delta. You will multiply S mu by this vector and you will get a differential. You will have a very nice equation that I will show afterward. So if you don't like, if you feel uneasy with supersymmetry, one can follow another path, which is start from a gauge symmetry, So Young Mills is under control. Reparametrization is more or less under control, but it will evolve with time. I guess it's a few months. Then determine S and S mu, and then ask for S and S mu invariant actions. Now, for all Young Mills supersymmetric theory, it works very well. And I hope it will work for supergravity one day. And what I want to stress is the following, is that the mystery of non-closure of supersymmetry for me is solved by the following observation. In general, you have S and S mu, which is something well defined. Once you know it, you compute the invariant action, it's fixed. Then you discover that this action has additional symmetry, accidental symmetry, and in all cases, you get the right number when you add the number of genders. It makes a spin orb up to a twist, right? And S mu nu is very accidental in the sense that it's not a really good symmetry of the action because, as I said, it concentrates the non-closure. So S mu nu is the symmetry of the action, but it only commutes on shell with S and S mu in general. Now, this is the case for maximal supersymmetry where we know that no auxiliary field exists. And in cases where you have auxiliary fields like n equal 1 or n equal 2, you can do the thing on shell or off shell. Right? So this guy is an accident of nature, but it tells you that supersymmetry is related to. I mean, supersymmetric theories are related to TQFTs. And I don't understand why there should be a relation between supersymmetry and TQFTs, because only S and S mu are relevant, but it's a fact. Oh, everything. And by the way, same observation. Generally speaking, you have R symmetry here, okay? But there is something like R symmetry here, but it's always much smaller.
I thought you needed the S's and the S bar.
Oh, yes. That's schematic. Right. Yeah. So getting a vector symmetry is something which is obvious because of this conservation of T mu nu and the fact that T mu nu is Q exact, but it has to be built in a nice way. So the easy cases are n equal 2, either in 4 and 8 dimensions, and actually 8 dimension is very nice, but it works as well as in 4 dimensions. So in 8 dimensions, your supersymmetry multiplet is A mu, spinors with 16 components and a complex scalar field. And so we know that's the easy case to do the twist. So here you have the spinors becomes a vector, a cell-dual 2 form, and a scalar, and your complex field become a scalar ghost and anti-ghost. Now, in 4 dimensions, so you would have a 4, 3, and 1, which is 8, the sum. And in 8 dimensions, I remind you that you can define self-duality on a manifold if you have spin 7 holonomy, because in this case you have this nice anti-symmetric tensor which plays the role of epsilon mu nu rho sigma in 4 dimensions, and it splits a 2 form, the 28 component, into a 7 and a 21 in a spin 7 irreducible way. So 8, 7 and 1 makes 16, which is what you want, and you have this nice drawing which is familiar for people who play with BRS symmetry and TQFTs. S on mu is psi mu modulo plus d mu c, so modulo gets function with gets parameter c, and q on psi mu is d mu phi. That's why you have these things. So this guy is an anti-ghost. It has ghost number minus 1. Its variation is a Lagrange multiplier. So this is Fedef of anti-ghost, and phi bar is this guy, and q on phi bar is eta bar. This is all well known. And what you want to do is to invent a way to get this vector symmetry that you believe in, and it has to be here. And you want a nice equation to determine the vector symmetry acting on all these guys. And by the way, in Kurth space, a vector operator doesn't make sense. So so you must be in a case, it would be a G2 manifold here, where you have a covariantly constant vector in such a way that you will have a second scalar Beres operator that you will be able to write like that.
Are you assuming spin 7
or G2? No, no. In the past, I would say spin 7, right? But to get the vector supersymmetry, I need a constant. Yes, yes. Then I have a constant. I can fish like that, and I get a constant vector field.
I didn't understand what SU nu bar is.
S, which one?
Right there.
Here? Oh no no. This one you should. It's blue. It's in blue, so you can forget it. For the moment, you see, you will. This guy has no geometrical interpretation.
Doesn't have what?
No geometrical interpretation. I'm not going to build this guy. I'm going to build S and S mu, the black guys. And at the end of the day, when I will have the action, I will go to flat space and I will discover that there is an additional symmetry of this type. And then I will determine action from the action of 9 generators, and actually it will have 16 symmetries. And this guy can be untwisted into the Q alpha of supersymmetry. It's a long time after the beginning of the game. You have 16 generators here, and these are 16 generators. But for, okay. So as I said, SA is psi, S psi is d phi, and so on. So this is the equation to build the vector symmetry. It's very similar to, so I put in blue everything which has to do with the vector symmetry. I mean, SA plus C plus, the black things is the old Beres equation which says that SA plus DC is psi and SC plus CC is phi. And with the Bianchi identities, you get the way psi and phi transform. Now, the game is to define this new operation delta. Now, delta increase goes somewhere by -1. If you remember that we want to write an action which is a T mu nu, which is Q of lambda mu nu. So lambda mu nu has goes somewhere by -1. And this is a Noether current of a symmetry. So S mu has goes somewhere by -1. There are not so many ways, and of course delta square must be zero. This is the only possibility. So there are not so many ways, since there's the grading, which is Gauss number, and so on. It's clearly, there is a D plus that here, which is missing. Yes. So this is the equation. And you see, I have introduced the kappa dependence. I mean, delta contains the kappa dependence. And so delta on A must be something proportional to kappa. And then in front of all anti-ghosts, I must put a kappa dependence. So this is the norm of kappa. And you just somehow look by inspection, and you observe that in your spectrum, you have a self-dual 2 form, and which is the anti-ghost. Right, and it must be written as a one form, as psi. So you just do the contraction along kappa of your two form. So this is just dx nu kappa mu k nu nu, and you have the scalar here. You see here you have 8 components, 7 and 1. So you introduce this one form G of kappa, out of which is the G mu nu, dx mu, kappa nu. So you complete the right-hand side by another one form, which is this one, the piece which goes to my -1, which is more or less the mirror of psi. And the same for phi, goes to my 2, so you put a kappa squared and phi bar. Right? Now, it's by construction, and then The square root of that has to be zero. It's a differential. So when you impose the Bianchi identity, the way all these guys, Psi and company, will transform will be such that the square root of this is equal to zero. So you know in advance that when you will, your equation will be such that S squared equal to zero, and this we knew in advance. Commutator of delta is zero, so you get this. And of delta with delta is zero, and the commutator of S with delta is the lead derivative along the vector kappa, which says this.
That comes because of the other kappa on
the side? Yeah. It's an easy computation. Yes, exactly. It's a very, very easy computation. Once you have written this equation, you say, well, it's obvious. Because for the purpose of gauge fixing, I mean, as a physicist, you know that you must have, and this will, something will happen when you will denote reduction, you know that in any dimension, you must have something which is not like a one form, but a Selbel two form. But since things are obviously unified, you must put together a one form, Selbel two form, and a zero form. If you have a constant vector, it's obvious. There is just one way to do it like that. Right? And your equation has to be homogeneous in kappa, so somehow this is the only possible equation. And this equation is deep. It is deeper than what it looks. So, in any case... Here. Because you see... eta bar is a scalar, and then you need a one form proportional to kappa. No, there's no choice. So I don't write the formula because at the end of the, I want to go to n equal 4. But as I was saying, the S invariance tells that the S A is psi, so L must be S of something, and S mu symmetry will fix what you put here. Turns out that the action is S delta of something, and which is fixed, because you want the action to be independent of kappa. So the action is totally frozen by demanding S mu and S symmetry, and you get this, the n equal 2, d equal 8 action. And then you discover, when you go to flat space, invariant order 6, 3 other... Sorry, we are in 8 dimensions, 7 other things, and it will complete your symmetry to 16.
I'm trying to translate these formulas into geometry. I would guess, maybe someone could help me out, but that extra term in blue you put in, delta minus interior k, is whatever is wedge product by a one form that you're calling delta minus interior product by that one form. And that's where the k squared comes from in the next line.
I couldn't find a way to determine. You see, what happens is that I couldn't find a way to determine the action, this operator, from such an equation. And moreover,
I'm not asking that question. I just want to understand delta in the next line.
Oh, delta.
Yeah, d plus s. Okay.
Yes.
And you add it in blue, delta minus I.
Ah, sorry.
K.
So?
Saying, I think that's wedge product by one form, delta, minus interior product by that
form. Ah, you mean you don't like this?
Not that I don't like, I'm just trying to geometrically. Is anybody that just seems like the only thing you could really do.
I'm not sure that delta is. What do you want to say? Do you want to say it's wedge product with the one form?
Wedge product. I want to consider delta. Yeah. You can think of delta as either a vector field or one form.
Right.
For purposes there, since you're taking the exterior differential, I want to think of it as a wedging by one form. And it's dual.
Because delta on A is not proportional to A.
Delta on A is nothing but it's just here. This is delta on A.
I see. But so that's not quite.
we have time to discuss this. And now a little bit of, little surprises. So, I want to go to four dimensions, remember that. And I want to understand the equations in four dimensions are somehow complicated, but they come from something very simple. And it turns out that going from 8 to 7 gives the essential property that you have in four dimensions. And after that, you have to go from 7 to 4. And then it's only very simple things which happen. And here something interesting happened that Greg knows because your balanced TQFT of long time ago, when you go from 8 to 7, you get something that you call NT2. You have a 2. So NSL2R symmetry will pop up right now. So we understand that in 8 dimensions we have S mu. S mu is whatever it is. So we have 9 generators which build a closed off-shell algebra, which determines everything. So if we go from 8 to 7, what's going to happen? Your S mu, S will remain S, it's a scalar operator, and your S mu will become an S bar, a scalar, and a vector with 7 components. A mu will become L and AI, 7, it's a scalar field. If you were interested in S mu minus, but you're not, you would have, it's a 7, scalar 2 form becomes a vector in 7 dimensions. But what is interesting is that your anti-Gauss, which is a self-dual 2 form in 8 dimensions, becomes a vector, an anti. I just mean that SL2R symmetry will appear. Now, in fact, you start from 8 dimensions and you do some compactification on S1, which is like a circle. And what you're going to do in the first step is consider that your kappa mu vector is tangent vector to S1. Okay? So, and if you just recopy the nice equation that we have on the last transparency, it becomes much nicer. Kappa disappeared by definition in 7. This is an equation in 7 dimensions now, so kappa has disappeared. So, delta becomes S bar because by definition of this vector. So now you have 2 scalar operators. I would call this BRST and this anti-BRST. And you see there was an I kappa on A, which is A8. So it becomes L, the blue guy on the right-hand side. And
so that's L you brought from the left-hand
side? Yes. And I painted it in blue to remember that it comes from the left, right? And the important feature is the fact that this guy was a self-dual 2 form. And you can check that this plus Bianchi identity is exactly the previous equation with this choice of kappa. And now And now you discover that this equation is totally symmetric between Gauss and anti-Gauss. You see symmetry psi bar, cc bar, ss bar. And you're going to tell me that this is not very symmetrical, but actually it is. And there's an SL2R symmetry. And again, if you have knowledge in BRS symmetry, the diagram that I have before, this is A8. This was chi mu nu minus. It becomes a one form. And actually, there is symmetry here because you can put L down. This eta, which is psi A, you put it here. And then you discover the usual very symmetric Gauss-anti-Gauss diagram. When you have BRS symmetry in a way which totally respects Poincaré supersymmetry. And you have SL2R symmetry because this is Gauss number 1. So this is, say that Gauss number, you have a bigrading, Gauss number anti-Gauss number. So Gauss number 1 means a 1, 0. Gauss number is 1, anti-Gauss number is 0. Total Gauss number minus 1 means that you have Gauss number 0, anti-Gauss number 1. So it's a 1, 0 and a 0, 1. Now this is a 2, 0, a 0, 2, and this is a 1, 1.
difference in Gauss anti-Gauss numbers with respect to what symmetries?
SL2R. I say that typically, you know, when when you do, I don't know, things like that. See, bar the, I'm talking about Fedev Popov things. Then you this is Gauss number minus one, Gauss number one. Okay. And then it's nice to say that C bar is 0, 1, and C is 1, 0.
With respect to what?
It's Gauss number, anti-Gauss number.
Right.
And the effective Gauss number of a field is the sum of Gauss number and anti-Gauss number modulo 2.
Right, exactly. So I'm just asking, what are the...
Gauss number, it's the Gauss number that you have in quantum field theory is sum of Gauss number minus the anti-Gauss number, sorry. Okay. Modulo 2. So it's either 1 or minus 1 or 0.
So I just wanted to know in this context, what's the corresponding generator for Gauss number and anti-Gauss number?
Ah, it's not... No, it's just you just have a, now you have a tri-grading. You have forms which are phi, Lorentz degree, Gauss number G, anti-Gauss number G bar. You define by grading.
Okay, so
no Lagrangian, no nothing, no charge, no current for the moment.
Right, I'm just asking how G and G bar are defined here.
Ah, so as I say, you have to define your gradings here.
Yeah, that's the question.
So S is the BRS operator. It's a scalar operator. It has Gauss number 1. It includes and anti-Gauss number 0. This is S. S bar is S bar. It's a 0, and a 1. Psi mu dx mu, which has Gauss number 1. Say it's a Gauss. It's something like it's a psi. It's a 1, the one form. Gauss number 1, anti-Gauss number 0. And so on. Psi bar mu, dx mu, as it is just psi 1, 0, 1. Phi is a 0 form, it's a 2, 0. Phi bar is a 0, 2. And L is a 1, 1. 0.
So the second grading occurs when we go to 7 dimensions?
No, it's always, you can always define this by grading. You don't do it because you're lazy, usually. You see, what happens is that you have, look, when I was very young, I said that when you have a p-form Gottschild, phi p, when you want to do the Feynman argument about having Gauss and anti-Gauss, you know, loop of Gauss and anti-Gauss, which compensate for physical degrees of freedom, so you have a mu, c bar, according to Feynman, and the Lagrange divisor b. Right? So you say that A is just A 1 0 0 plus C 1 0 plus C bar 0 1 0 0. And generally when you have a P form Gottschild, you put a P form to get current quantization, and it's a sum over A, the formula which is here, P minus G. And then here you put something like G. The sum must be G minus G, something like that. Sum like that. And then you get this, when you have a P form Gottschild, a P, if you are more physical, you say that you have a Gauss of Gauss, which is something like that. P minus 1. Then you have, that's really the way you build representative of SL2R. That's why you get. And if you count degrees of freedom, it's like counting in P in, if you're in D dimension, it's like counting in D minus two components. Because if you take the sum of the component of things, you get that the number of degrees of freedom is something like C, P, in D dimension, D minus two. You put things which contribute positively, things which contribute negatively. Right? So it's a way to go to the physical, to transverse space. Right? So here, that's how it goes, this decomposition. And obviously, it's SL2R because this is like a spinoral tensor with fully symmetric indices, this kind of thing. It's SL2R symmetry, obviously.
So what is the residual internal symmetry of this dimensional
theory? SL2R.
That's it.
I mean, you started from equations which are very dissymmetrical in eight dimensions for good reasons. Here, you see? and that's why you had this kappa and so on. No symmetry, it's really by construction. So when you go one dimension lower, you get an SL tower symmetry. And then what happens is that your topological ghost becomes an SL tower doublet, your ghost of ghost triplet, SS bar a doublet, and so on. Now, what about the vector symmetry? Okay? The vector symmetry is not here. Actually, I have frozen the vector symmetry by choosing kappa along the circle. But I'm going to, of course, there are so many choices of choosing a circle that I will recover. And of course, I'm going to recover the delta symmetry, the vector symmetry in an SL2R invariant way. So but this is not interesting. It's just that this nice equation, which is SL2R invariant, is just a mess when you expand it. So, but you see that it's really SA is psi, S bar A is psi bar. So it's really a full symmetry between ghost and anti-ghost. And you have to be very careful to, if you're familiar with these things, you know that you must introduce auxiliary fields, you see? Because if you look to SC bar, you have a B field here. And S bar on C is L minus B. If you do the sum, which is given by the equation, B disappears. So all Lagrange multipliers in the game of Biret symmetry are just fields that you introduce to raise the degeneracy because there are many ways to get zero. Equation only determine SC bar plus S bar C, or S bar psi plus S psi bar. So you have another auxiliary field T. Now, you have to be very careful when you introduce the auxiliary fields not to break the SL2R symmetry. You have to be careful, right? So, for instance, this choice, which looks natural, breaks SL2R symmetry. If you look the way SC bar transform and S bar C transform. So you have to define auxiliary fields, which is always possible, in such a way that you respect SL2R symmetry, and you must put a 1/2 here. It will pop up on the other side. You will have minus 1/2 and minus 1/2 here of C bar C. Right? And there is an explicit way to solve the BRS, anti-BRS equations, which is SL2R invariant, and so alpha 1 is S, alpha minus 1 is S bar. Right? But you know that, Greg, I guess. It's somehow buried in your old paper. But this is not very interesting.
Can I just understand this SL2R?
Yes.
An internal symmetry of a twisted seven-dimensional theory?
Yes.
Suppose I start, address the question, is it possible to start on the seven dimensions directly?
Yes.
And see this as a residual R symmetry? But then why isn't SL2R
not? No, I wouldn't say so. There is no R symmetry. There was no R symmetry. I started from the TQFT in 8 dimensions. It has no R symmetry. Just ghost number. Now, 7 dimensions, you have an SL2R symmetry. It's explicit. It means that if you start, okay, you can check, every detail can be checked. Take supersymmetry in 7 dimensions. There is an R symmetry which is something. I don't know what it is actually. Probably SO3 or right. And then when you you have to be careful with signs because of this ghost anti-ghost, and I guess this SO3 will become SU2. Sorry, SL2R. Right? But I'm not yet computed this vector symmetry, which is the which is the goal. But nevertheless, knowing S and S bar, you can say, this is the topological Getz function, which is just dimensional reduction of octonomic equation in 8 dimensions. And you discover, if you have good taste, you will choose this Getz function. But actually, you will be forced to do that by vector symmetry, which is not here. And your supersymmetry action in 7 dimensions is this one. And it's only with the right coefficients that you will get the vector symmetry.
What does the factorize of?
Mm-hmm. Oh, this equation. It's like the Bogomolnier equation. But it's this SL2R symmetry which.
Is that the translation variant of octagonal symmetry?
Yeah, it's you know, L is A8. Like when you go from 4 to 3. Huh? Now notice that we have lost our vector. We don't have a vector symmetry because we choose a particular constant vector kappa. And so the fact that you have many choices means that, in fact, you will have something like an automorphism of the seven-dimensional symmetry in seven-dimensional. And in fact, you can parameterize all possible choice of choosing a circle by a SL2R form in 8 dimensions, which is like a vector in 7 dimensions. So your automorphism will depend on a covariantly constant vector in 7 dimensions. Okay, you can say that in a very fancy way. But you expect that there is a commuting operator gamma such that another symmetry, which is going to be the vector symmetry, because it will be parameterized by a kappa, which is here, is the commutator of this. So in other words, in any case, since we start from 8 dimensions, where we had a vector symmetry, we must have S bar, or the scalar part of the vector symmetry in the dimensions, and the rest is a vector Si. Now, it's clear that we have an SL2R symmetry because we just have to look at the field spectrum. Then we have another vector symmetry. Where does it come from? Well, this guy, S bar I, that will be determined in seven dimensions, actually comes from the self-dual two form that we had in eight dimensions. So maybe a way to understand S mu nu minus in eight dimensions is to look from the seven dimensional point of view. Because this guy, because of SL2R symmetry, is obvious. This is the SL2R partner of SI. And we have control on S and SI. Now, again, I've painted in blue S bar and S bar I for good reasons, which is the fact that the full action, and in particular the Morse function, which is the Bogomolnier equation, will be determined by having an S invariant action with SI symmetry. So somehow, although we have 16 operators here, which correspond to the 16 supersymmetric generators, only 8 of them are relevant to determine the action. The rest comes for free. It's very interesting because, you see, you would think that since in 8 dimensions you have a symmetry, a closed, this is closed, right? Because we have 9 generators, and they really come from the thing which close in 8 dimensions, the vector and the scalar in 8 dimensions. Then you would say, well, it's like in 8 dimensions, the action is determined by these 9 generators. Actually, no. An action determined by S symmetry and SI symmetry in 7 dimensions has automatically S bar symmetry. I don't know why, but it's like that. It's probably because of the SL2R symmetry. So now we face the problem to get a nice equation to determine S, S bar, delta, and delta bar, because I multiply SI by a constant vector in 7 dimensions. So out of SI, I build delta, delta bar. And notice that the same vector here is here and here. So, not so many choices, again, to build. So we have this operation here. SL2R symmetry says that this should be the answer. And the squared of this is zero. And if you decompose the fact that the squared of this is zero, you get an equation which is interesting. It says that the part of the squared of this which has Gauss number zero is S delta plus S bar. It must be zero. So this equation is actually not sufficient to fully determine the symmetry that we know to exist because it is dimensional reduction of the thing that we have in 8 dimensions. So this equation says that this is not determined, and then the solution to this guy is S delta equal Li derivative along kappa for this one, and the opposite for this one, in such a way that the sum is zero. So something is missing that I will write on the next transparent. But you see that somehow it's a different equation, because it, contrary to A dimension, we have SL2R symmetry. So and now, since I was unable to write, I did some the poor man presentation. Cannot do the thing on computer, so it's just a copy of the paper. So this is the equation that I just showed. Okay? This is the C which is here is to write an equation you need ingredients, and this is just the three form which is made of the structure coefficient of octonions. Right? Because we must have, as before, delta and delta bar are partial to kappa, so we must introduce a source of kappa terms on the right hand side. We know the field spectrum, and in a sense, SL2R symmetry really forces us to do that. So, as I was saying, this is zero, so we have this equation, and actually, to complete this equation and to obtain this relation, there is no choice, and this. You can write these two equations. Actually, so now we have three equations. This one, and this one. And obviously, only you can take this one and this one, which is equivalent to this one and this one. See, this relation S delta equal Li derivative along kappa, which is means that S mu is D mu, is obtained when you take the square of this operator, because you see that the part with Gauss number 0 is commutator of S delta plus commutator of D and I kappa, which is Li kappa. So a way to get this equation is by means of this. Now, you can check that this equation and this equation are the dimensional reduction of what we had in 8 dimensions. But it can be computed from scratch. And to summarize what happens in 7 dimensions is that you just step from 8 dimensions, so SL2R symmetry appears. Now we have 16 and not 9, because, you know, before we had only 9 because we couldn't understand what was S mu minus, but now because of SL2R symmetry we have 1, 1, 7 and 7, the sum is 16. So this guy are determined by equations. Now, if you ask invariants simply under S and SI, it will be automatic that you have invariants under the rest of the algebra. You can write the action this way. And of course, and then you get the... So psi alpha is determined by this thing. But then you compute and you get that this is exactly the supersymmetric action, which is now determined only by 8 generators instead of 16. It's a closed algebra. It's everything that you can see. It can be written as in all possible ways. I will show that in 4 dimensions. It is, right. It's S delta of something. It's SS bar of something. It's everything. It's even worse. It can be expressed as the squared, the fourth power of the vector symmetry, something like that. There are many ways to write the action. Right? And there are many symmetries which are redundant. And this is why supersymmetry, from my point of view, is a mess.
Let me understand the basic point. So, if you make, you express this SL2R symmetry and some different full action, right?
No, I stress that the field spectrum that you need substance. The field spectrum is SL2R covariant or invariant. I don't know how to say it. Right? Now, I can define 16 operators, I mean 2 scalars and 2 vectors, in a way which is SL2R invariant. So I have written horizontality equations on curvatures, which are SL2R invariant. I check that I can do that with a nice property, which is essential for getting supersymmetry, which is this one. No, sorry, this one. I'm very satisfied out of that.
But so in ordinary language, one would probably say that we want to construct the full Wolf shell and a corresponding super angular
yes.
from part of it and trying to impose our symmetry.
Yes, yes, but you won't succeed, and it's too big. So if you go to the untwisted language, you'll be forced to define 16 generators when you do that, because it's a spin-off, or 4 spin-offs, and then they don't close. It's by their nature. There's no way to close this algebra. So in the twisted language, then your 16 guys decompose like that. Mm-hmm. 9 of these guys, this, and 9 is 7 plus 1 plus 1. This one close.
Yeah,
and there is just, in this language, you just have SL, you just have SL2R. You don't have the...
So this is because, this thing is like choosing some group and our symmetry group, right? So,
you do some, there are many ways to twist, and but you have to do, when you twist, you have to do something to the Lorentz group and something to the R symmetry group. As a result, something, the thing will disappear.
Yeah, I'm just trying to translate that back now.
The interesting phenomenon, as I said, if something has to be remembered, is that we have these 9 guys which are closed, but you need only 8 of them to determine the theory. When you will go to 4 dimensions, you will still have 16 guys, and only 6 of them will be relevant. Although you always have a maximal subalgebra, which closes off-shell with 9 generators. Okay, I'm almost done. Now, I remind you the Vaffa-Witten form of the action. So they said that it's a complicated action, but when you look at this action, you see that you have the squared of F mu squared by limiting this auxiliary field and the squared of this Getz function. And you see it's tricky, actually, the twist, because it affects bosons. Your 6 scalar fields in N equal 4, which are in the fundamental of SU4, SU4 totally disappear, and then you have phi bar, ghost of ghost for the gauge field, L, which is, where was it? It was here. So you have phi, L, phi bar. Actually, they built a triplet of SL2R. So that's how you get your 3, half of the 6 fields. And the 3 other scalar fields build a Seldel 2 form. So you see, your SU4 is in bad shape at this point. It has been completely disintegrated.
Not completely,
but yeah, but the SU2, yeah, right. No, that's how Vaffa and Witten did long time ago. They had the SU, an SU4 times 2 SU2s, and they chose one SU2 at the right place and so on. So that's the thing which is here. And when you have this multiplet, you really understand the Getz fixing. And then you have 3 plus 4 topological Getz functions, so 4 here and 3 here and so on. And actually, with Ease and Kano, we guessed that in 97, that you could go from 8 to 4, and that would simplify things. And the link, actually, with the... How do you recover the... this is really not a scalar field, it's a level 2 form. But on a hyperkeller manifold, when you do the twist, what happens is that you have 3 constant hyperkeller forms with an SU2 index, and actually you can map this level 2 form on 3 scalars with an SU2 index. So in a very detailed way, you get an SL2R cross SU2 cross SO4, but the SO4 is not the right one. You have to take the diagonal, and you have to de-diagonal, I think, and at the end you get SU4 times another Lorentz group. Now, in what I called an elegant way, you will define, you will get your, it's the same game. Now, once you understand the fields, you write the horizontality equations. So, it's exactly as in seven dimensions. There's one which just says that the S delta plus S bar delta bar is zero, that you have to complete here. So you get an equation which determines the way A transforms, and its ghost. It goes to the topological ghost, and so on. And the Bianchi identity says how the psi and psi bar and so on transform. You have something for the Selvial 2 form, B mu, H mu nu minus, that I call HI, like that. And then you have to complete. So when you expand these equations, you get all possible information that you want about N equal 4, supersymmetry, under the form of two scalar operators, and two vectors. Now we are in four dimensions, so 1 plus 1 plus 4 plus 4 is 10. It's here. So we have the 16 guys here, and what happens, so we have the 16, so we have 1, 4, 1, 4, 3 and 3, which is 16. Now clearly you have to get rid of these ones if you want to go a bit further. Then you discover that here you have 10, they don't close. So the maxima, and actually the maximal subalgebra which close is made out of a scalar, a vector, Selvial 2 form. Right? Now, another algebra which closes is made out of S, S mu, S bar, with 16, the sum is 6, with 6, I mean there are 6 of them, and invariant under these 6 symmetries determine the full action. I mean, what happens is that at most you have 9 generators, and the only way to get 9 generators is to pick up S, S mu, S bar, S mu nu minus. And happily, this guy is not relevant because it has no interpretation in four dimensions. So it turns out that with the nice guys, which are two scalar and a vector, you determine the theory. So, anyway, so this is the SL2R way of expressing the scalar and vector symmetry. It's nice, but okay. So when you untwist this, you get the supersymmetry algebra, precisely. Now, when you look for an action, that's where some surprises come. When you write an action, it has to be being S, S bar, and S mu invariants says that it has this form or this form. I mean, it has many forms. But it's fully determined by only 6 generators. And something which is very well known in the language of superfield is the fact that the action can be written as the product of 4. It's just the superpotential, and you integrate, which is 4 derivatives. In the language of the TQFT, it's just 4 times S, so it goes under minus 4 here, because each guy carries, goes under minus 1, you put the epsilon symbol, and you just take this cocycle, which is well known. So in any case, it's remarkable that S, S bar, and S min variance determine completely the action. And there are many ways to write the action. The result being here, which is not nice. after expansion. So what is the conclusion? I said it many times. N=4 theory is much simpler in terms of those guys. I claim that these 10 operators, 1, 1, 4, and 4, they can be constructed just from our ideas on what is a Young-Mills field. And then there is this SL2R symmetry, which has to be built in. Okay. Now, only the knowledge of 6 of them, those, is needed to build a theory. And all non-closure is concentrated in 7 generators, and the existence of these operators, the cell dual operators, for me, it's a kind of accidental symmetry of the action that you build from the principle of invariance under those guys. However, thanks to their existence, if you add them to these 10 generators, you have 16 generators, and you can untwist them, and then you discover supersymmetry. The SU4 internal symmetry, which is actually SO5-1 in the Euclidean space, arises. It was not needed from this construction. I believe that the path from 8 to 4 dimension explains the SL2R symmetry. Things are very clear in 8 dimensions. And if one is interested in applications, and actually I am, you know, since the 6 generators, they really control the theory of shell, as one say. And so with Guillaume Bossa, we are trying, and it's clear that it's going to work, is to have a very straightforward proof of finiteness of N=4, which is okay, it's finite, we know it, but it's I think it's good to have a simple proof. And at the end at the final end, there will be N=4 is as simple as N=0 from this point of view, because you escape the non-closure, right? And the only thing, so there is the world identity, which is off shell, it controls everything. And about finiteness, you just have to do something like it's very similar to what you do when you demonstrate that the Adler-Bardeen theorem for the anomaly. You see, you just have to prove a finiteness result, which is not very complicated. So that's one application, right? And as I was saying at the beginning, I'm more interested by supergravity than by this. But it was, in a sense, necessary to clean completely what happened in Young-Mills to have a hope that it can work in supergravity. Actually, I'm convinced that that kind of construction will work for supergravity. I don't have the details, but I have some clues. Okay. Okay, finish now.
Is proof of finiteness supposed to be the non-derivative?
No. Of course, yeah.
It seems to me that the reason you stay with the closure is, again, because you break R symmetry when you go to Houston, right? It becomes a small improvement. Things become more controllable. But therefore, the question is, there's other twist that Phoenix explore that give you non-engineered monopole equations.
Yes.
It's not actually deeper R symmetry, even though the twist is different.
Yes, so yes.
I would expect that.
No, the, Right. Well, the idea that you use the twisted, you know how to do the twist. There are three possible twists, isn't it?
Right.
Right. And what you're supposed to do, according to me, is just to use the twisted variables to do proofs, if you can do the proofs. And after that, you untwist.
Right, but I think the story would be quite different from this other twist, which has bigger R symmetry even than the twisted theory. Which gives you more limited monopole functions in that joint.
The difference is at this level, as shown by you just have a different field representation.
Yeah.
So you may have quaternions or spinors and all that, right? But
when you have the forecast,
yes. Okay, it's a succession of big details.